Zorak, and you are listening to the Scarab Swarmcast, hosted by John Manis of the Scarab Gaming Convention.
The Scarab Swarmcast is recorded, mixed, and produced at Lord Wellington's Beef Trapeze in Columbia, South Carolina. Mostly. Scarab is the South Carolina area role players and board gamers convention held annually in Columbia, South Carolina on MLK weekend for 4 days. The Scarab Swarmcast podcast is hosted by and features many of the Scarab staff and guests. Views and opinions expressed on this show usually come from a random D20 chart or an FAQ found on the web somewhere, and usually don't reflect anything any sane person would or should think. I'm Toast, your kobold announcer. And now, here's our host, John Middles!
All right, you're listening to the Scarab Swarmcast. This is John. Hey, guys. I was going to get this episode out earlier, but I've been actually kind of under the weather. It all started when we got back from Mega Moose Con. I had a little bit of the con cruds there, from there. Then I had hurt my back, and then I actually got sick again right after that. So I'm just now coming off of that. So I've had some respiratory issues. It's been just kind of in general pain in the butt. But fortunately, I've got, I don't know, Toast said he was going to come in, and I think he's got something for me. I don't know what exactly. I'm a little worried about that, but we'll see. But on this episode, not to leave you guys hanging for much longer, we do have some game reviews. We got a little something extra kind of thrown in there, and then, of course, we're going to have our Pathfinder report, where we're going to talk with somebody from Minnesota about Pathfinder Society in Minnesota. So that'll be interesting.
Door.
Oh, here comes Toast. Hey, Toast. How's it going?
Hey, John. It's going pretty good. I got something for you.
Oh, what you got there?
I got some soup.
Some soup.
Yeah.
Soup sounds good. What type of soup is this?
Go on. Try it. Test it.
Huh? Let's see.
Tastes pretty good. Yeah. Eat it up.
It's pretty good. It tastes like chicken?
Chicken, yeah. Yeah, we'll go with that.
I didn't even know you guys could cook.
John, I'm a kobold. Of course I can cook.
Okay, that's down corrected.
Jeez, that's what we do.
I'm gonna eat some more of this chicken soup.
Yeah, we'll call it chicken.
Huh?
Nothing? Nothing?
I'll eat some more of this chicken soup. You guys enjoy the rest of the Scarab Swarmcast.
Yeah, enjoy it.
Good.
Eat some more soup. And now the Scarab Swarmcast is proud to present Scarab Game Reviews! Reviews of games found in the Scarab Game Library.
Danger, danger, dinosaur! It's a 2-6 player game for the ages 8 and up. It takes roughly 30 minutes to play, and it's a good family game.
Who made the game, Calvin?
It was made by Playco.
And to play the game, you roll the dice to explore and gather your basic needs, food, water, and fire. Along the way, you earn victory points by turning your ideas and labor into cool stuff. We roll if you dare, danger, danger, dinosaur.
All right, so what's some of the good things about this game?
Yeah, it was very easy to learn, entertaining.
Quick to play, too.
Yeah, seemed like it was pretty easy to set up.
I thought the cards and the dice were pretty intuitive as far as the symbols went.
Agreed. It wasn't hard to figure out where the point values were on everything. Essentially, what you're doing in this game is it's a press your luck type of game that you're also collecting cards. Because you're rolling dice and you're trying to match up the symbols to get your cards.
Which also means it was really easy to realize that I was going to lose because I love to press my luck.
Right.
All right. Well, was there anything else good?
Meeples. Really meeples. Cool meeples.
Yeah. All right.
They had bone meeples and people meeples.
People meeple.
All right. Anything bad about this particular game?
Meeples. No.
I have one bad thing. Okay. It can definitely take longer than the 30 minutes if you're playing with indecisive people.
That's true.
Yes. Yeah.
You could have... You could
As
have,
I look around the table.
You could have analysis paralysis on this game.
But
you're,
other
unless
than
you're
that,
Calvin.
Unless you're me. I was very decisive every time. Just re-roll. It's good.
Yeah. But other than that, that's not really the game's fault. That's a person's fault.
Wow. Player error. Is there any other thing bad that we thought about this game?
Not really.
No. It was pretty entertaining.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it was quick, it was easy to play and pick up. Is there anything other kind of interesting about this game? I think I already yelled meeples a bunch of times.
Meeples.
I was upset there were no actual dinosaurs.
Yeah, for a game called Danger Dinosaur, there's a distinct lack of dinosaurs.
I didn't think the dinosaurs came up enough on the dice. It only on a six-sided die, there was only one dinosaur.
So you would have put like an extra dino.
I would have put at least two dinos
on
the dino
dice. Or mix it up where like one has two and then one has only one. And
I don't know if I would have done that. Make all the dice the same.
Yeah, because then people could pick the...
Like I said, I just didn't feel that the dinos came
clearly,
up. I know they came up a lot for Calvin, but they only came up once for me. So
Yeah, they came up a
they
lot
They only
for
came
me.
Up once or twice for John. You know, I just didn't think they came up frequently enough for a game called Danger.
I'm fairly
Danger
certain
Dinosaur.
I'm the only one who got two hit one run.
Yeah.
So...
To be fair, you were rolling them a lot more often.
Yeah. Yes.
All right.
Okay, so for Danger Dinosaur... this was John and Ruby and Tim and Calvin and Iron GM 2016 Creston.
Yep, seems about right.
All right, so we got Epic Card Game by White Wizard Games. It's for 2 to 4 players with just the one box. It's for ages 13 and up, and it takes about 20 minutes to play.
Epic is a fast-paced card game of fantasy combat designed by the creators of Star Realms, Hall of Famers Rob Doherty and Darwin Castle. Hopefully I pronounced this right. Epic gives you all the great gameplay of a trading card game at a tiny fraction of the cost. 2 to 4 players can play sealed, draft, or constructed out of this one deck. This deck is a complete game containing 120 unique playing cards, 8 double-sided token cards, and a rulebook. Add a second deck to support 5 to 8 players.
Awesome. Actually, we should totally do that. So what's some good stuff about this game?
To me, not buying multitudes and billions and billions of dollars of Magic cards or other trading card game cards is great. If you like that kind of game, but you don't want to invest tons of money in cards that you may not ever get.
So it's more like an LCG than a CCG.
Yeah, it's a very fast-playing Magic, I would say.
Yeah.
Relatively speaking. I mean, we played a 4-player game.
I'll buy that.
Yeah. I can see this ending in a couple of turns if you get the right...
Potentially.
If one person gets the right draw and the other person doesn't, this could end really quick.
Yeah, had you not got that one card that wiped everything, I had the damage to deal to everybody with that one turn.
Yeah. But we're not here to tell each other about our characters.
No. I'm just saying it could have ended faster.
It could have ended a lot of ways.
That's true.
We could have just... Anyway.
The art was really nice.
Yeah. It was.
That was the one good thing I was going to say about the game.
Yeah, a lot of the flavor was decent. Right? A lot of the cards mechanically made sense.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll say this, for a game that has things where you throw counters into play, it gave you cards for those counters, so that was kind of cool. I don't think Magic does that, per se. So, hey, what's something bad about this game? Let's all go ahead and say it. It didn't take 20 minutes to play.
It did not take 20 minutes to play.
It took hours and hours of...
Almost
2 hours to play.
Yeah.
There
really?
There were four of us playing.
Oh, wow.
So it may go faster with 2 players, but it was...
Yep.
It's definitely drawn out with the 4 of us.
So here's another bad thing, I think. It took a while for us to go through the rules. And honestly, if none of us had played Magic the Gathering, it would have taken a lot longer to understand the rules of this game. Anything else bad about this game? No.
I don't know.
It's kind of swingy. Like, some of the mechanics that you wouldn't expect to be really good are really good. Like, the ambush mechanic, like I mentioned earlier...
Was really good.
Doesn't seem like it, just on paper, doesn't seem like it would be really good. But it lets you play a creature on someone else's turn, and that ends up being really valuable.
Yeah, because you can build it. You can build your army.
Build your army pretty quickly. Pretty quick. You could have, like, Matt had his whole army destroyed, and then on his turn he built up a lot of stuff.
Yeah. It's
a lot of wolves.
But. It's a very high power level. You know, it's like if you're playing Magic with all the best cards and you don't have to have any mana to play them.
You could say it's epic.
Yeah. It is epic. So that's both good and bad. It's a lot of fun, but it was crazy. Like, I brought out this one thing that I thought would trump everything, and then everyone else brought out other things that trumped it way hard.
And then I stole your turn.
And then you stole my Triceratops.
Best move of the game. And then next thing we know, Calvin's at like 49 hit points, and we're all like, wait a minute.
That was after I punched him in the face down to like 12.
I was down to 9 at one point.
And then you got all the way back up to 39 or something.
Well, it's crazy. No, it was 47.
Yeah.
Numbers.
So if you like playing ultra-powered Magic and lots of numbers.
If you like juggling numbers, this is the game for you. So if you got 20 minutes to kill, you should play some other game, because this does not take 20 minutes to play.
It did not take 20 minutes.
So anything else we want to say about this game?
Nothing like Star Realms. So if you were looking at this...
thinking, it's like a fantasy version of Star Realms.
Yeah, it's not at all. It's... It's ultra-powered Magic the Gathering, which is cool.
A lot it's like Magic the Gathering.
If that's what you're looking
that's
for.
What you're, cool. So it was Matt and Kristen and Calvin, of course, and myself, John, reviewing this game. Again, this was Epic Card Game. You can check it out at the Scarab Game Library. Please do so.
The Refuge, A Race for Survival by B&B Game Studios. For 2 to 6 players, ages 13 and up, about 30 minutes.
Beat your opponents in this game of survival. The objective of this title game is to finish first while fending off other survivalists in this treacherous journey. Beware of spawn areas as zombies can block your path and force you to backtrack. Are you prepared? Seek your refuge.
All right, so what's some good stuff that we can say about this game?
You can screw over your friends.
Yeah,
that's true. Plays pretty quickly.
Well,
it really does.
I particularly can vouch for the
part. That's true. So the learning curve on this game is very, very, very small. Yeah.
The rules.
It's like a learning line.
Pretty simple.
Pretty simple. Yeah.
Art design was nice.
Yeah.
It's got a nice aesthetic going on.
All right.
So,
the 30 minutes was pretty accurate.
Yep.
Rules and everything. Learning. Yeah. You know, most games are like 30 minutes play time. And they don't include the learning time. This included learning, even.
All right, so what's some bad stuff we can say about the game? I'll say the paint job on the minis, but...
Yeah.
But...
We think this was a prototype game. It looks like their Kickstarter for the game is actually going to launch in October as well.
Right. So it looks like what they're doing is selling/giving out prototype pre-copies. So these may not be the actual final copies. Can't verify that yet, because we were given it at Origins already opened.
Right.
So yes, the paint job was pretty bad. It felt tacky still.
On the minis.
On the specific. Minis.
The board
looked really nice. It was really well printed.
These minis also look like they don't hold up very well under intense
heat
and stuff.
But
prototype issue.
Right, but if you are a war gamer that uses the plastic miniatures and things like that, or painter, you can run it under hot water for about 10-15 minutes, and they become pliable enough, and then you can dunk them in cold water, and they'll reform. So, any of these plasticky, resiny figures that you get bent staffs and things like that, you can do that with. I know I've had to do it with some of my figures.
All right.
The other... bad thing I want to say is where the rules are printed very nicely and they give you a reference card and they have them in the book, some of it, I don't want to say it's bad grammar, but it just doesn't read easily. It
doesn't flow well.
Right. It doesn't read easy. it takes maybe one or two kind of, wait, what did I just read again?
Gotcha.
But they are simple rules. They're only like one sentence a piece and there's only like 6-8 rules total.
But it's a quick and easy game to set up and learn how to run and play, and you can play it over and over again because it only takes about half an hour or so to play.
Yeah, or if you're particularly vicious,
it can take less time.
Right.
Yeah.
If you are not equally vicious to everyone, someone races out in front while the rest of us are killing each other or collecting cards.
Right.
Yeah.
So is there anything else we want to say about this game?
I like the fact that it has kind of a built-in timer, so it's not going to last a really long time. And that built-in timer is once the deck runs out, it's either the first person to reach the end with a key or the person closest when the deck runs out.
The main thing I'm a little concerned with overall is one of the easiest winning strategies is just to sit there, collect cards in the safe spot where zombies can't get you, and then once you've amassed enough materials, you just, in one turn, basically roll through the entire board.
Well, you say that, but there's that switch spot.
Which is what I use to get ahead. Well, I'm technically, I mean, there is no second place, but had Tim gotten taken out, I jumped all the way to the front.
If I didn't have that,
everybody back in three cards.
Yeah, I literally just got that key card just before I did that surge, so...
See, I think there's enough... It's simple, but I think that there's enough nuanced stuff to it. It depends on who you play and what their strategies are.
Yeah,
I can totally see that.
Yeah, I'm concerned about the pocket watch, which you just play over and over
again. The pocket watch does seem kind of powerful, and there's no limit on how many times. So if you had five pocket watches...
Or the weapon and adrenaline combo.
Yeah. Yeah, as we saw, you were able to move a couple spots because you had adrenaline. Spots, you had gun, adrenaline, gun. And then you had another adrenaline, I want to say.
Yeah. So.
Overall, nice, quick, easy game. Kids, it's a zombie theme. So, you know, but it's not overtly zombie, you know.
It's not gory.
So, a kid zombie game, this is a nice, quick, friendly kid zombie game.
I would have liked,
all the little kiddies out there to get their brains eaten out.
What I would have liked to see, because each of the miniatures had a very different build to it, I would have liked to see some variant where each of the miniatures, depending on which one you chose, maybe had a special once per game kind of ability, like in Dracon or something like
that. Yeah, that would be cool.
Like, you've got a bow and arrow, you can shoot a zombie two spaces away once.
But that's not in this game, so it's irrelevant.
Well, that's... I just said... Is that the category of anything else we wanted to see in the game? All right, so again, this is The Refuge, A Race for Survival by B&B Games.
Studios.
Or B&B. It says Games on the box.
Yeah, Studios is underneath it. It really is.
I'm B&B Games.
Yeah, B&B Game Studios.
It is.
So it's both of those.
Yes.
But I'm right.
So are you, John.
So playing this game was Calvin, Kristen, Tim, Ruby, and me, John.
Rawr,
zombies.
Rawr. What's all the excitement hearing about Scarab having some game days as well? What's that?
That's right, Scarab Gaming Convention takes their show on the road. We're talking about Scarab Game Days.
Game Days.
Game Days.
Oh, yeah.
That's right. One day out of the month, Scarab staff goes to your friendly local gaming store and runs games all day.
All day.
All day.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that sounds great. It's just right up my alley. Gee, I don't know if I have enough money to go to something like that.
It's free!
Free!
Well,
okay, calm down. All right, you had me at free. I sure wish I knew when the next game day was or where.
To find out where, all you need to do is go to www.s-c-a-r-a-b.com and click on the Scarab calendar. Or you can go to Facebook and check out the events listed on Facebook. Or you can listen to the Swarmcast for regular postings of when some of these game days will occur and where. Or you can listen to this guy.
Hey guys, this is John from the Scarab Swarmcast. Just want to let you know about our game day coming up August 20th in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina at White Widow Games. Come on by and check it out. We should have a lot of role-playing games. There's going to be a lot of board games going on, some video games as well. It should be a lot of fun. Game starts at noon, and it goes until around midnight or so. So check it out. August 20th, Myrtle Beach, South Carolina.
Well, gee, that all sounds great. I think you're going to have to check out these game days. I'm there.
Scarab Game Days. Play them before they play you.
Scarab Game Days will actually not play you. You'll play them. You'll have a lot of fun. They are free, and they are at your local gaming stores. You should go check them out. Go on the website. You should get all sorts of information about it. And please, everybody have safe fun, and just have fun. Play games. Play lots of games. Play more games. With Scarab.
To explore. That is the main tenet of the Pathfinder Society. Exploration and reporting. The two main tenets of Pathfinder Society. Explore, report, and cooperate. The three main tenets
a Pathfinder Society are explore, report, and cooperate. Nobody expects the Pathfinder Society report. Nobody! You're listening to the as yet unnamed Pathfinder Society segment on the Scarab Swarmcast. I'm John, and I've got a guest with me here today, all the way from Minnesota. Hey, who are you? And, well, what area are you involved with in Pathfinder Society?
Hi, John. I am Andrew Christian, and I am from the Twin Cities in Minnesota. That'd be Minneapolis and St. Paul area. I am the venture captain of St. Paul. I basically put together and organize all of our Pathfinder Society gaming up here in the Twin Cities.
And I understand you have another venture captain that's in the your area as well?
Correct. John Denning is also a venture captain up here from Minneapolis, and we work together to make everything run as smoothly as possible up here.
Is there anything regular going on in your area? And I understand you have something a little special coming up very soon.
Yes. For the regular game days, we actually have our game days or local gatherings. I know that their terminology is different depending on which region you're from. But basically, we have events happening every day of the week except for Monday and Friday. So across 7 different stores in the Twin Cities area. And that really allows us to facilitate games for, right now we have about 200 active members in any given 3-month stretch of time we get games going for and everything. And so each store probably has anywhere between 2 to 6 tables per evening or weekend day that they have games running.
Wow, that's pretty impressive.
It's a lot to organize, but John and I have put together a great crew of venture lieutenants and venture agents and the others who we just call store coordinators who have not chosen to take the plunge into the venture officer world that really carry the load for making sure all of these events happen as smoothly and efficiently as possible. So that lets John and I pretty much just kind of preside over the whole area and you know, kind of deal with it in a more meta way, I guess you could say.
I understand that you've got something big coming up in September, around the middle of September.
Yes. Last year, you know, my co-venture captain, John Denning, kind of had a what he calls a harebrained idea that he wanted to run basically start our own con, Pathfinder Society convention. And in conversation, this was like right around March or April. And we're like, well, can we actually pull this off by September? Do we have enough time? We decided if we could secure a venue that we could justify the cost for within a couple of weeks, that yeah, we thought we could do it. So we worked really hard for about 5 months last year and put together a convention where we ran 12 tables per slot over 5 slots, and we raised money for a charity. Basically, everything above our operating expenses went to the charity, and we raised the convention's name is SkullCon, and we raised approximately $3,700 for charity. That's actually the check we cut to them. So this is going to be our second annual SkullCon, and we're just hoping to get the word out to more people so that Tubman, which is the organization we give money to, they deal with family violence, domestic violence issues. Largely, I think they cater mostly to women and children, but they provide all kinds of services from scholarships to help train for new job positions, legal fees to help get the divorces, shelters, just general assistance and counseling for family issues that may crop up.
So again, that's SkalCon, S-K-A-L, is that correct?
Correct, C-O-N. And we have a website, www.skalcon.org. And okay. If you are able to go to that website, you can certainly, even if you can't attend, we certainly are willing to accept donations to that will go directly to Tubman.
The dates for SkullCon were September 16th through 18th, correct?
Correct. Okay. September 16th through the 18th, starting at Friday night at 6 o'clock, and then we will have three slots on Saturday, so it runs all day Saturday from 8 a.m. to midnight. And then Sunday, we start at 11 a.m. and run till about 5.
Is this convention, is it primarily Pathfinder Society, or are you going to have some other games there too?
Currently, right now, it is just Pathfinder Society. Since we are a new convention, we decided that we would start with what we know. And then if it really starts taking off, there's always could be the options to add in more games of different genres, board games, or even other types of organized play or role-playing games as well. But right now we're focused just on Pathfinder Society, and now that includes both the role-playing guild as well as the Adventure Card Guild.
So we will
support both the Pathfinder Adventure Card Game organized play and the role-playing game organized play at the convention.
Oh, cool. There's been some really good stuff coming out of that card game lately.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think right now Tanya, our organized play coordinator, Tanya Woldridge, was able to come out to our February convention and premiere some of the new decks for us, and I particularly like their Alchemist deck that I got a chance to preview while she was here.
Excellent. Yeah, Tanya's been busy. She's been all over the place these last couple of years.
Yes. Yeah, she's taken the organized play coordinator role and really making some good things happen. So
aside from skullcon.org, if anybody in your area wanted to get in contact with either you or find out more about your game days and your other events going on, what would be a good way to do that?
We have a meetup site that be www.meetup.com/MSP-Pathfinders. Basically, that will take you right to the page that will show all of our events that we have. And you can click in there's a set of tabs along the upper side, and on the right side, there's one called Calendar that will give you the calendar view as well.
Well, this sounds really great. It sounds like like I said before, you've got a lot of stuff going on. You guys are just busy.
as a matter of fact, this year, a couple of new conventions kind of popped onto our radar. So we just got done with running events at 2DCon, which is a convention that supports their own charity as well. So we were able to do that as a charity convention. Then we've got another convention coming up at the end of August called LionCon, which is just a single day run up in St. Cloud, Minnesota, which is about an hour and a half northwest of the Twin Cities. And so all of these conventions, and then our February convention, Con of the North, are all the big conventions that we're supporting with Pathfinder Society play.
So what was the last scenario or adventure path or module or what have you for Pathfinder that you played, and what did you think of it?
The last scenario that I played was No Plunder, No Pay, which was, I believe, a season zero, but it might be season one. So there's so many seasons out there anymore sometimes it's hard to remember exactly which season some of the earlier ones came from. But it's season one. Okay. It's a 7 to 11, so tier 7 to 11, so 7th through 11th level characters are allowed to play it. We played it at the 7-8 sub tier, and I was basically playing my hunter. The theme of the hunter is a boy and his moose. So his animal companion is a moose. I always he has a southern accent because he's a country noble from northern Talador. The moose is more intelligent than he is, I think. So it's Hamish Setwald III and Arnold his moose. That's probably my favorite character, actually. So I have a lot of fun playing him. And in a recent scenario I played him in, he decided he was going to become a Hell Knight. So and I had no idea that No Plunder No Pay was going to be a perfect interlude for him to attempt to mimic what he saw with other Hell Knights. So that turned out pretty funny for me and the other characters and players.
So it's kind of funny the way you describe your character, because at Origins, me and my wife and a few other friends of ours went, and our friend Calvin was running a game, and during the break in his game, I came over to look at what he's doing. And he's pointing to this weird miniature that's on the map, and it's some sort of boat. And I was like, what is that? And he's like, this guy's playing a druid or ranger or something, and he's got a moose for an animal companion.
Oh, nice.
So, what are the odds?
I actually finally found we have this set of swords, a hobby center, I think it is. Not Hobby Lobby. It's the Hobby Center or Hobby Town. I don't remember. Okay. Where they actually have all of these plastic animal miniatures that I'm sure typically used in hobby panoramas and stuff like that. But I found the perfect one that would be the right size that almost fits into just a 1-inch square, but really is a large creature. You know, so I was able to use them for, you know, until the moose grew large. But now he's like the perfect moose. I actually have a moose mini for my moose. So I was really happy I was able to find that.
Mooses aside, are there any of the new Pathfinder materials that maybe you've heard of or that you've seen that look like they're coming out that you're really looking forward to?
Yeah, they did some really nice preview seminars for the horror adventures and the AP, the adventure path that's based off of that, the Strange Aeons. And I kind of like that kind of genre anyway. So I'm really looking forward to the adventure path and how that's all going to play out. But I would have to say the one that really stokes my interest would be Starfinder.
Ah, yeah.
Which doesn't really have a lot to do with Pathfinder Society right now, but back in the day, I was one of the guys that ran Living Dragonstar for Fantasy Flight Games, Dragonstar supplement for 3.0.
Wow.
D&D, and so that basically it was D&D in space. It was total space opera, wizards with laser guns, and, you know... And I love that type of genre, and so I'm really, really looking forward to Starfinder.
Yeah, I saw just recently that they've actually put that tab on the side of the Paizo website, and I was kind of excited about that too. Yeah, but I've been hearing just in our last episode, Dale Collins was talking about how he's looking forward to the horrors that supplement as well. And yeah, that genre kind of appeals to me too.
Right now I'm playing through Carrion Crown, and I'm really enjoying the horror that's going on in there. We just finished up book two of that. And so just trying to think of ways to, you know, maybe tie the two together, although I don't know how how well that would work until I actually read it. But, right. You know, I think I'd actually really enjoy GMing Strange Aeons, too, and you know, put the fear of weirdness into them.
So speaking of putting the fear of weirdness into people, I'm sure that you've GM'd quite a few games of Pathfinder. Have you had any interesting rules questions that might keep coming up, or any rulings or such that you've had to come up with recently?
It's with as many things as I've run. I'm up over 308 scenarios run now, I've been just running the new Seeker arc lately, and so obviously whenever you're doing the high level play like that, that's when all the weird stuff comes out.
Of course,
But I would say that biggest ruling was that there's a spell called, I believe it's Frigid Touch, that even if they make their save, they take a debuff effect.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You know, and I don't recall if it's staggered or shaken or fatigued, but you know, you take a debuff effect. But the guy tried to use it against a creature that was immune to cold. Well, the spell doesn't specifically say what happens if they actually take no damage from the cold. You know, so that would also apply if, say, a rogue had evasion. If they evade the, if there was actually a reflex save, so to speak, I guess. I think it's a fortitude save. But, you know, if they had to make a save versus it, what happens? And so it's just kind of interesting, you know, I had to make the ruling that, you know, if the guy's not affected by what the spell actually does, then I don't think the rider should take effect either.
That makes sense.
You know.
Because it's related to the cold.
Yeah. Correct, yes. And because, I mean, if you think about it, what it is essentially doing is it's forcibly giving you hypothermia.
Right.
And if that's what's happening, and you're not actually taking any cold damage, then how can you get hypothermia?
That makes sense to me. We've had something similar come up with the witch ability of Icy Tomb, where it was one of these. Well, if this creature's not affected by that, do they still suffer all the other effects of it?
Right, and then of course I believe that's. Oh no, it's Icy Prison that is written in such a way that you'll take a caster level of damage as long as you're trapped inside the prison, even if you make the save and are only entangled instead of actually imprisoned. And it's got like a minutes per level duration. So you cast the spell at a creature and, oh, they're going to take only 17 points of damage. For 17 minutes.
Right.
Or well, basically 170 rounds. You know, so it's like, well, okay, they'll die eventually.
That's, yeah.
So, yeah, you always run into, those types of weird interactions between the rules that there's absolutely no way that the designers and developers can account for all of the possible circumstances where things interact with one another. And so as a GM, you have to try to figure out, okay, well, based on the rules that are there and, you know, I hate to say it, but common sense, how does this work? You know, and in some cases you try to come to a compromise with the players as well, mm-hmm. so that everybody's happy with the outcome.
Right.
You know, I don't like to just say, no, you can't do that, to try to come up with ways to make it work so that the player gets a little bit of something out of it, but so that it just doesn't ruin the entire encounter.
Do you have any particularly funny or just crazy off-the-wall PFS stories that you'd like to share or that you could share?
You know, again, the thing that comes to mind is my the Hamish, who's the hunter that I play, being my favorite character right now. He's the one I've been playing a lot lately. And he had a chance to be diplomatic in his last mission, which was no plunder, no pay. And my dice were on fire, and so I turned two or three encounters that could have been fights into non-fights. But because I had just retrained him to be able to become a Hell Knight when he reaches ninth level, I'm trying to play him as a Hell Knight. Now, you have to understand, this guy is started with a 7 intelligence, and I spent a lot of prestige and gold to retrain him, 15 prestige to be precise, to retrain him so that I could get his intelligence up to 13. And so now he goes into this other scenario. I don't want to say too much about it because it's a very recent one. But he goes into this recent scenario where organically the role play happens that he decides he wants to become a Hell Knight, which for me is really awesome that I was totally not planning this for his build or the character, just what things that happened, he decided maybe I should be a Hell Knight. Basically, people were nice to him, and he's smart enough finally to actually understand that they weren't just... that they were actually sincerely being nice to him and complimenting him instead of patronizing him and or condescending to him because he's so dumb. So he decides to go full bore, and then the other players are trying to get on this ship, but they decide, well, maybe we're going to have to steal it. So they find a way to leave my lawful Hell Knight behind while they go try to do this, meanwhile slaughtering all of the crew on the ship. And so I come up and I'm like, what happened here? And pulling out my best Andy Griffith style of lawyer speak with a few Peter Falk-esque statements like, well, now I don't know anything about this, but, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And basically convinced the captain of the ship not to turn my party member to be hanged by the authorities for murdering his entire crew needlessly, to basically he'd have to spend 5 years as a member of his crew now, in basically in servitude on, you know. And of course the other player's like, wait, what, do I get a say in this? Like, sure you get a say in it, but if you don't follow my lead, the GM's gonna hang your character, and then you're gonna have to either spend 5 prestige to get a body recovery or 5,460 gold pieces for a raised dead. Which would you prefer? He chose the servitude. And since downtime in Pathfinder society is ambiguous, it didn't really affect his ability to continue playing his character.
He might have gotten a profession role out of that.
Sure, yeah. If it were my character, and I don't know if the player is planning on going that route, but if it were my character, I probably, the next level, would have put a rank in sailor.
Yeah.
Profession sailor, because I like to do that sort of. I like to react to things, and then I have several characters whose builds have completely changed based on things that happen.
Oh, yeah.
So it's not always the most optimized choice, but... for me, it's important that the story of the character makes sense too.
Yeah, I've got at least one character that I've done that with as well. I've got a barbarian who just all of a sudden, because she's been dealing with so many gems, I started putting ranks into appraise and profession merchant, which honestly didn't make any sense for the character when I first made the character.
But now it
completely does.
Right. Well, yeah, and maybe even a possible switch to the exchange faction or something.
Oh yeah.
If you weren't there already, but it's just little things like that. I really enjoy organically building my characters based on the adventures they go through. Mm-hmm. It just so happens that I often don't have the language I need until after the adventure, when I go up another level and put a rank in linguistics to say, well, I just went on an adventure where Aklo was important, so my character is going to learn Aklo.
These next couple of questions may be pretty easy for you to answer based off of some of what you've just told us. What's your favorite faction and why?
My first character ever, whom, if you've played through it, you'll understand, who played through Eyes of the Ten, started off as Andoran. He was an ex-slave who basically was brought into the Pathfinder Society by a couple of the early season 1 venture captains, and basically was all about freedom. He makes no bones about he's always Andoran. He became an Eagle Knight, and he goes into adventures dressed in his Eagle Knight uniform, with all of his brass and medals and all of that. So I kind of have a fondness in my heart for Andoran, you know, the whole idea of freedom and freeing people from oppression appeals to me on kind of a personal level as well. But that being said, I have a couple characters lately who, again, organic things have happened, and they are Sovereign Court, or I guess Liberty's Edge would be Andoran now, but they're Sovereign Court. I never really, Tal'Dorei as a faction never really appealed to me all that much. But when Sovereign Court became a thing, the storyline behind Sovereign Court, where there's this noble who's running around and trying to gather all these other nobles across the world together to create this defense force in case something like the World Wound opening up again were to happen. You know, like season 5 dealt with kind of the theme of Wrath of the Righteous, where demons were starting to pour out of the World Wound, and the Fifth Crusade was happening. So right. the next crusade. So if you know, so she's trying to bring Tal'Dorei back to prominence instead of being such a decadent society, and so that kind of appeals to me as well. Basically, reestablishing a useful and fruitful political system instead of all of the narrow-minded infighting that I guess in a way my two favorite factions have a lot to do with the current events in our world today.
Yeah.
And based on how I feel about them. So I mean, you know, not that we really need to get into any of that, but I guess that would be why I like those two factions. And one character, this is actually kind of funny. I was playing Assault on the Wound, and the GM was asking, you know, because if you play in that and you have boons from throughout season 5 on any of your characters, you could get possible bonuses in that scenario.
Right. That's, and, yeah, I've run that one before. That's a big one for pulling in all that season 5 stuff.
And he was asking, who has this boon, or at least that's what I thought he was asking. And I was like, oh, I have it. And what he was really asking is who's of the Tal'Dorei faction, because back then I believe it was still Tal'Dorei. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, you know, I've got that boon, and he heard I'm from Tal'Dorei, and so my character, and to be honest, I don't even know if I remember what faction my character originally was, went through that scenario playing through at least the first half of it, playing the basically the army of exploration, which only Tal'Dorei people are supposed to run. Uh-huh. And so I was like, well, shoot, if Gloriana Marilla, who is the faction head of Sovereign Court, trusts me to lead her army in battle, well, I've got to join that faction. So I spent the prestige to change my faction from what it was to Sovereign Court.
Well, that's pretty awesome. I like the way you made that work. But yeah, that's, oh my gosh. Yeah, that the first time I ran that scenario, just the look on everybody's faces when I'm asking them what if they've got certain boons on their sheets.
Yeah, they're like, "Wait, what? We're supposed to remember what we have?"
Yeah. And I actually had one person who had the boon from what was it? Where Mammoths Fear to Tread, I think it was.
Yeah, Where Mammoths Dare Not Tread.
Yeah, yeah. And I was like, well, here's what you could be in charge of if you want. And he was like, wow, that's great. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, that if you like adding a little bit of tactical battle, basically a war game versus a war miniatures game versus strictly RPG, Assault on the Wound is kind of a lot of fun to deal with the mass combat rules. I know I personally really enjoyed it.
Yeah, and I would suggest if anybody's going to run that to allot yourself a little bit extra time, especially for that first part.
Oh, definitely. Because one of the biggest things is explaining this new set of rules, this new mechanic, right, to the players, and maybe even running a test round, saying, "Okay, yes, I'm just going to try this out, so you guys can get the feel of it," and then if it goes well, restart or don't restart. Just say, "Okay, well, it went well, so that's your first round. Let's keep going." If it goes badly, you can say, "Okay, this is why it went badly. Okay, now let's start again.
Now let's start again."
You know, and I just think that that's a really fair way to help the players really understand it and enjoy the game itself.
Yeah. There's not a ton of scenarios where they throw something like that in, a completely different sort of rule set for a significant part of the scenario.
No, I would say that, well, the other big mechanics that they've thrown into scenarios have been chase scenes.
Yes.
And I think that over the years that the chase scenes, they've really kind of refined how they can work really well in a scenario, so that you don't leave the guy in full plate armor just standing at
right,
position right. one for the first hour of the game.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, and then, but I also, and then there's the what they're calling the it's the intrigue ultimate intrigue rules for essentially social combat.
Oh, okay.
Well, latest scenario has a lot of kind of hot and cold concepts of that, but really it's just they took the rules and refined them from what originally started in Black Rose Matrimony from season 4 and Hell Knight's Feast from season 5, and I believe they included some of those rules in Merchant's Wake as well.
Yeah. Okay.
And it's basically a set of rules for interacting with a bunch of NPCs on a social level, but being able to mechanically figure out, you know, successes without it just being, okay, make a diplomacy roll, you know, mm-hmm. that you are actually going through and you're trying to find things out about these NPCs, and then you're trying to figure out, what's the best way that I can convince them to do what I want them to do. Bid for Alabastrine is the season 7 one that just came out, which, to be honest with you, is my playthrough it at PaizoCon this year was Alex Agunius, who runs Everyman Games, ran that for me, and it is in my top 5 favorite Pathfinder Society experiences, and arguably, or is at least in the discussion for my favorite experience.
I know we kind of got off of the topic a little bit to go that way, but I think that's fine. We had some really interesting stuff we were talking about there.
Sure.
So just to kind of bring it back, so you've told us about your favorite faction. So now, again, this one might be pretty easy for you to answer. What's your favorite race and class combination?
I have characters of of many different races, but I would have to say that human is still my favorite, especially now that with the advanced race guide that came out a few years ago, that you have the option to make what's called a versatile human, where instead of getting the extra feat and skill point, you can get basically 2+2 bonuses for your stats, for 2 different stats. So I actually have used that a couple of times for a couple of characters, and I just think that with all the different ethnicities that they have in the Galarian campaign setting for humans, that there's just so many role-playing opportunities that really are meaningful, at least to me, that I can connect with more readily, because we have an African analog, we have a Native American analog, we have an Arabian analog, a French analog in Galarian and in our real world. So if I want to play a character from Galt, you know, that's a country that's loosely based off of revolutionary France, you can play the cheesy Monty Python Frenchman, you know, and it works. But I have some context for that. But it's really hard to get context for what really is a dwarf, what really is an elf. And everybody has their own idea, either from watching Lord of the Rings or reading the books instead of just watching the movie.
Right.
Or the various different, you know, movies that or fantasy novels that have all of those things in it. So I guess if I can find some sort of real-world context to apply to that character, that's what makes it my favorite, which is why human is probably my favorite.
Okay.
Unless it's the Vanaran, because I love monkeys. But not legal in Pathfinder society, but in a home game I'm playing in, my GM allowed me to create a Vanaran character, so I'm getting my monkey fix. As far as class, I really enjoy making versatile characters instead of just straight melee or straight magic. So more of like the slayer, rogue, alchemist, you know, anything where I can get a lot of skill points and be able to do a lot of different things. That's where I would go with a class usually.
So far, when I've asked this question, everybody has said human so far.
Really?
Yeah. So humans in the lead.
I figured you'd at least have heard a couple ASMR or tieflings in there.
Yeah. But no, it's everyone likes either being able to put that bonus, that plus two attribute wherever they want, or that bonus feat.
That extra bonus feat is huge.
Oh yeah.
Because it allows you to start whatever build, you know, feat tree that you're going for your build, essentially a level early.
So I've been talking with Andrew Christian out of the St. Paul area, or
correct St. Paul, okay. Minnesota, correct.
St. Paul, Minnesota. Again, everybody should go check out skullcon.org. And should check out the link that I'm going to share for the meetup for the MSP-Pathfinders. Before we go, are there any other events or anything else that you would like to mention?
Right now, SkullCon is the one that we're really ramping up for. The specific game day that I preside over as the organizer would be at a venue called Level Up Games in South St. Paul, Minnesota. We run that every first and third Tuesday of the month. So coming up on August 2nd, I will have another game day just before Gen Con there.
Yeah, like we established earlier, you are just a busy, busy person.
Yeah, and that's just my Pathfinder Society stuff.
right. Okay, well, again, thank you, Andrew, for coming on the Scarab Swarmcast on the as-yet-unnamed Pathfinder Society segment. We'll get the links out there to SkullCon, which, again, is September 16th and 18th, or through 18th. So it's going to be coming up soon. And we'll get the link to the meetup, all sorts of...
Perfect. Thank you, John. Yeah. I think you should call it Society Report.
Ooh, I like that.
Because the tenet of Pathfinder Society is explore, report, cooperate.
Ah. Yeah.
And so this is sort of the report part of that mantra.
I like it. I'm going to write it down right now. All right. That's it for this segment.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming on. And now, Tales of the Scarab brings you the strange lives of Ray and Kay Mills.
tonight's episode, Cake Pops.
Well, my dear, I'm off to work. I better make like a hipster coffee so I'm not latte.
Oh, Ray, you're horrible.
No, that's in pH. I'm Ray.
Ray.
Just like a beam of light, oh. I'll see you when I get home, unless my eyes are closed.
Oh, that man. Always making puns. He's like a big... a big pun-isher. Oh, enough of this dilly-dallying. I've got cake pops to make for the secret meeting of the Scarab Club. Ooh, I've got just the most delicious recipe for a blue velvet cake. Now, where did I put that? Oh, yes.
Kay goes to the kitchen. Time passes.
And which is the small dollop? Voila. Another superbly decorated scarab-topped cake pop. Why, I wonder who that could be. Coming. Hello?
Cake pop.
Sorry, did you just say...
Cake pop. May I have a cake pop?
Sure. Please come in. I just finished making these. If you'd just like to have one...
Oh, another.
Please wait. No.
Give me here.
Those were for... cake pops. You ate them all. Make quite a mess. Well, I'll wait here. I'll go get a towel and some ginger gel cleaning soap from the to clean up all this up.
She leaves and then comes back.
There we are now. Now, where did he go? What's this on the floor? $5. Well, I guess I need to clean all this up and make some more cake pops.
Time passes.
There now. Even better than the first batch, if I do say so. Now, who on earth, too, could that be? Hello?
Cake pops! Yee!
Yes. Well, say me. What are you doing? You just made this one. Jeez. I guess I need to clean this mess up, too. What did you just shove in my hand, anyway? Another $5? Listen, kid, you really should learn some manners? Why, he's gone. Strange. Well, I really need to make some more cake pops if I'm going to have any for the meeting tonight.
More time passes again.
Okay, I must be behind somebody because I'm back.
Oh, Ray, it's good to have you home. Say, what is that?
Well, this? Why, it's a goat. I brought it home from work.
I thought you weren't allowed to have one of those at work.
Well, sometimes my manager lets one slide.
Oh.
Say, are those cake pops I smell?
Well, those are for the club. I've had one heck of a time with them all day.
All day? That must make you an all day...
Don't you even think about it, Ray.
Oh, all right then. Say... what made them such a chore today?
Well, you wouldn't believe me if I told you.
Well, pretend I'm one of those free samples of ginger gel cleaning soap you got in the mail.
What?
You know, try me.
Oh, you. Well, my first batch was devoured by an old man who showed up at the door. My second batch was devoured by a young kid who showed up later. They both gave me a brand new, crisp $5 bill and disappeared without me seeing them leave. Isn't that just... strange?
Not as strange as some of the folk we know, but yes, very. Say, you say there were two of them.
Well, yes, one old and one young. Why?
Look at this. Here, in the paper. Just last night, local cake pop plant blew up. A poor old grandfather and his grandson were touring the place at the time. Says here... a pack of wild deer ran through the place, and blam!
Did you say grandfather and grandson? Why,
yes, here they are.
Oh my, Ray, these pictures. They were the two that showed up today, and you say this happened last night?
Why, yes indeed. Say, they must have been ghosts.
Oh my.
That settles it. You say they each gave you a crisp $5 bill?
Yes, but what does this have to do with anything?
Because, my dear, when the planet exploded, those deer were caught in the fire as well.
Fire? You mean...
Yes. Those $10 were burnt to a crisp.
Oh, gravy!
Tune in next week when Tales of the Scarab brings you the Scarab Women's League in To Squash a Spider.
Spiders hate fire.
Brought to you by the cleaning power of ginger gel cleaning soap. As strong as a redhead and twice as clean. Well, that's going to be it for this episode of the Scarab Swarmcast. I'm already starting to feel a lot better thanks to that soup that Toast gave me. So I just want to give a thanks to Andrew Christian from Minneapolis, St. Paul region, the co-venture captain of that area. Remember, go check out skalcon.org. That's skalcon.org. September 16th, 17th, and 18th in that area. Go and check them out. Also want to give thanks to all the people who helped me with those game reviews that you heard, and to my wife Ruby for taking care of me while I was sick, and Toast for giving me that delicious chicken soup. chicken's not supposed to be furry, is it? Anyway, let us know what you think about the show. Let us give us feedback. You can send us feedback to swarmcast@s-c-a-r-a-b.com. That's Scarab with a bunch of dashes. Hit us up on Facebook. Go ahead and like us on Facebook. We're trying to get 200 likes before Scarab 2017. Something amazing will happen, I promise you. Go ahead and follow us on Twitter. We're Scarab Swarmcast at Scarab Swarmcast, so that's easy enough. You can subscribe to us through iTunes and Stitcher Radio. In fact, go ahead and leave reviews for us there. Leave positive reviews. That'd be great. That'd be even better than just leaving a generic review. So I need to go back, get some more rest so I can be well for our game day just next week on the 20th in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina at White Widow. So if you're around and if you've heard the Swarmcast, stop by. Play some games. I'll be running a couple games as well. Maybe Toast will be there. Who knows? So, until then, this is John from the Swarmcast signing off.
That's it. That's the end of this episode of the Scarab Swarmcast. If you liked this, or even if you didn't, feel free to send us an email at swarmcast@scarab.com. That's S-C-A-R-A-B. Lots of little dashes in there. Or you can leave us a message on Facebook. Yeah, Facebook. If you want us to read any of your comments on the show, let us know. Hey, subscribe to our show. Check out the show on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. Or you can grab that RSS feed from our website. You can get our website off of Facebook or off of Scarab's website. Ah, it's all a bunch of internet flibbity-jibbity. So, until next time, when you think of Scarab's Wormcast, think of this podcast. And when you think of Toast, think of me!
Music on the Scarab Swarmcast is by iFight Dragons at iFightDragons.com, MC Lars at MCLars.com, and Midnight Syndicate at MidnightSyndicate.com. Pokemon, Pokemon, go! Pokemon, Pokemon, go! Pokemon, Pokemon, go! Go, 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 go! Pokemon, Pokemon, go! Pokemon, Pokemon, go! Pokemon, Pokemon, go! Go, 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 go! Pokemon Go can't stop when I see him. Got kicked at the Holocaust Museum. Searching for that Squirtle and that Pikachu. But now I haven't had a bath in a week or two. Money on the subway, epic fail. Someone on the tracks down by the third rail. Hugging on my data through AT&T. Phone bill last week was at least 7 G's. Found a dead body in the stream by my house. Another homie looking for a Pokemon who drowned. Escaped to the past, I'm a 90s kid. iPhone to my face like a giant squid. Grandma's funeral staring at the screen. Someone in the casket heard my mom scream. Gotta catch them all, won't stop till I'm done. I play it when I drive cause it's so much fun. Pokemon, Pokemon, go. Pokemon, Pokemon. My go, Pokemon, Pokemon, go, 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 Pokemon, 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 go, go, Pokemon, Pokemon, go, go, Pokemon, Pokemon, go, 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 go. I got fired from my job, I was busy hunting Pokemon. Walked into a tree, now I got a broken arm. I was on my way to march against what the police will do. But then I got distracted, I was looking for a Pikachu. Got a call from my sister, said my mom died. Told her I'd have to call her back, cause I'm trying to get up to level 5. I'll be walking, heat or snow or lightning in the forecast. I'll be swimming through a flood if I could get a snorlax.
lost my dog, but I also lost 10 pounds. Pokemon, Pokemon Go. Will I catch them all, man? I just don't know. But I missed my wedding. I was out here getting rare Pokemon behind the convenience store. A Pokestop was a restaurant, and it's on fire, and there's smoke involved. But I stayed inside, and I died, because I need to get more Pokeballs. I'm Pokemon, and while driving, it's okay, I got insurance. I just ran to a tourist, caught a Pokemon while he was dying. Yes. I don't eat, don't sleep, and my phone goes beep. Saw an old lady getting mugged. I was about to help, but these Pokemon across the street ain't gonna catch themselves.
Pokemon, Pokemon Go. Pokemon, Pokemon Go. Pokemon, Pokemon Go. Go, 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 go. Pokemon, Pokemon Go. Pokemon, Pokemon Go. Pokemon, Pokemon Go. Go, 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 go.
Global warming destroying the planet. Who cares, bro? Pokemon Go.
Little kids home was starving and famished.
Who cares, bro? Pokemon Go.
Donald Trump might actually be the president.
Who cares, bro? Pokemon Go.
They kill black dudes, there's video evidence.
Who cares, bro? Pokemon Go.
The government is reading all of your texts and emails.
Who cares, bro? Pokemon Go.
In Afghanistan, there's no school for females.
Who cares, bro? Pokemon Go.
You can buy an AR-15 on the internet.
Who cares, bro? Pokemon Go.
They tricked everybody under 40 into debt.
Who cares, bro? Pokemon Go.
Go, 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 go. Go! Can we stop making this song now? I'm trying to get some Pokemon.